So welcome to this week's W3C CCG meeting. Today, we're very excited to have Sharon from Jobs for the Future to come back here a year later to provide an update in regards to JFF. But before then, just want to quickly go through some of the administrative stuff. So first of all, just a quick reminder in regards to the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct reminder. I just want to make sure that we continue to have respectful conversations and acknowledge each other's perspectives. A second, a quick note in regards to intellectual property. So anybody can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be member of the CCG with a full IPR agreement signed. So if you have issues in regards to creating the W3C account, or have questions in regards to the community contribution license agreement, please feel free to reach out to any of the co-chairs here. So these meetings are being automatically recorded, and the minutes are automatically transcribed. And we will publish the meeting minutes and audio recording usually the following day or within the next few days. We use GG Chat to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. You can type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue, or Q- to remove. And you can type in Q? To see who is in the queue. All right, a quick moment for the introductions and reintroductions. So if you are new to the community, or you haven't been active and want to re-engage with the community, please feel free to just unmute and speak out. Anyone? All right, so we do this like every week, so feel free to, you know, if you're feeling a little bit shy, feel free to just do that next week as well. All right, announcements and reminders. Any new announcements or reminders of the events, upcoming events or agendas? All right, a quick thing. So we recently, I think about 2 weeks ago, we opened up the process of nominating and electing a new co-chair, and we mentioned that not just through the meeting, but also Kimberly sent out an email about that. So far, we have one nomination, Will, and I think today is the last day of the nomination. So it was, Kimberly, you might actually.
I was just going to say thank you, Harrison, for getting started. Yeah, I had a little snafu right there at the top of the hour. So it was late joining. So thank you. Yes, the nomination period closed last night at midnight Pacific time. And so, with only one, nominee, Will, we are pleased to, have him as another co-chair. And I'm really excited about that. I asked Will very last minute if he had just a moment to introduce himself. So I will go ahead and put him on the spot and let him sort of say a few words before we move on to our main topic.
So hi, everybody. I'm Will. I didn't get much notice, but I'm happy to be contributing to the CCG. I've been participating for a while. I'm really looking forward to learning more about the work items taking place and hopefully getting some more work items going within the community. I don't have too much more to say. I've been around for, 5 or 6 years, specialized in cryptography, but interested across the range of topics discussed here. So cool. Look forward to working with you.
We're really excited about it too. I had an opportunity to spend some time with Will, appreciate how he asks questions, and is very articulate in helping everyone understand what it is that's being talked about. So, we are really glad to have you and welcome. Okay. So Harrison, where are we? We're doing announcements. Does anyone else have an announcement or reminder?
Yeah, I just want to give a quick shout out to Will again for actually volunteering for this work. So, you know, very excited to have him on, and you know, I think CCG will be even better with his help. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
All right. I do have a quick announcement. So there has been like a thread in regards to the video recordings. So a quick thing. Let me share my screen. Sorry, I don't have this handy with me. So every week we actually do send out the meeting minutes. So there's a script that sends out. Let me share this right now. So every week, actually, someone is helping us in the background to run the script and sends out this email. And there's a script that actually automatically generates this email. And then what it does is it includes things like the auto transcriptions. And by the way, sometimes there are errors in the auto transcription. So we'll get these requests and we'll try to go back in and then try to edit them to correct the transcription errors. And then there's also a link to the audio recording. And actually, there's also a link to the video version as well. And they all follow the same format. So for the video, you can see the link here. And then the it just follows the year, month, and date format. So just want to take this opportunity to solicit a volunteer, a developer volunteer, to help us modify the script so that we can actually automatically include the video link in this email as well. But before we get that volunteer to help us do this, I will just send it out manually in the agenda emails I send out pretty much every week. So I will add it and append it at the end of the email to the links in regards to the previous meetings. So I'll include those things, the previous meeting links to transcription, audio recording, and the videos in the emails I send out the following week. Okay? All right, so I will reply back to the thread, and then, you know, if you know anybody or if you can actually take about an hour or two to help us modify the script, just email back to any of the cultures. Appreciate the help. Thanks. All right. Any other announcements or reminders? Any updates on the work items? All right. So I just want to get to the main agenda. So I think a couple months ago or a year ago, we invited Sharon to actually from Jobs for the Future, JFF.
Wait, one second. Harrison, I think Erica has a hand up.
Erica. Sorry.
Hi. Yeah, I didn't. Sorry. I tried to be the applause and it did hand up, but I took myself off the queue, so I shouldn't be on there.
No worries. I did that before too. Thanks. Thanks a lot. All right. So, today we're very excited to have Sharon back, to actually provide some updates in regards to, Jobs for the Future. So Sharon, the floor is yours.
Okay. I hope you can hear me. I'm going to try to share my screen, but I'm also dropping a link into the chat, which is the deck that I'm going to be using today. Let's see, I have too many windows open. So Here we go. Are you looking at my slide deck?
Yes.
Okay. I will say, assume yes. Okay. So thank you for welcoming me back. I'm a little nervous, but hopefully this will be a good conversation rather than just pure talking on my part. So feel free to say something either in the chat or raise your hand. I'm sure one of the moderators will interrupt me and let me know. And again, I don't mind that. So I think that will be really fun. So I will just do a quick introduction or reintroduction, whatever the case may be. My name is Sharon Liu, and I work at an organization called Jobs for the Future, or JFF. And essentially, JFF is a not-for-profit organization in the United States. We work on transformation of the education and workforce ecosystems. And our goal for this year, which is our 40th birthday, is that we will help 75 million people who face systemic barriers to advancement work in quality jobs. JFF Labs, where I'm organizationally located, is the innovation arm, I guess, without disparaging, I guess, my other colleagues. And what we focus on is whether technology or the application of different technologies can help us to advance these goals. Our main funder is Walmart, and they have provided generous amount of support for all of this work that I'm going to be talking about today, as well as work that goes into the future. And I'll talk a little bit about what that looks like towards the end. And what is exciting about this funding is that it has enabled us to work together with a wide variety of partners. I've listed some of them on the slide, principally the National Governors Association, so that some of the work that we do can have sustainability in policy, practice, and funding across the U.S. With the Digital Credentials Consortium in the VC Edu Task Force, for which there is a big overlap between the co-chairs of the VC Edu Task Force as well as DCC, and a number of other partners who may or may not have sort of technology expertise, but are grounded in the use cases that we are interested in. So what is our use case? The next slide shows a little bit about how we think credentials, specifically verifiable credentials, can unblock some of the barriers that people face to advancement. And in particular, it's this idea of do I control credentials, aka the assertions or evidence of my skills and abilities, in a way that allows me to pursue whatever opportunities I choose to pursue next. Obviously, this is not, we are not saying here that once the technology is unblocked and once individuals control their credentials, that all of the systemic and economic barriers that people face are suddenly going to disappear. But what we are saying is we recognize that this is a barrier and we would like to address it. So what does that look like? That looks like a person with some formal and informal learning, some perhaps community service, military service, some government identification, some work experience, some credentials. But currently, these certifications and licenses and documents live in different siloed systems that are actually controlled by entities that are not the individual, not the credential holder. So we envision a future where individuals hold their credentials, could be in a wallet or some other way, and they can create different combinations, use them in combinations if they, for example, are applying to college to get prior learning credits, or if they're applying for a job to show the appropriate certifications and eligibility to work. And that's actually why we are interested in the verifiable credentials ecosystem, because this is, in our minds, how this use case that we are interested in becomes a reality. So how did we do this? We did this by copying some of the work that Anil John has done with the Silicon Valley Innovation Program, which I know a number of people on this call have previously participated in. And we essentially said, if we are going to take a look at this image, What we need to do is break it down into the different steps where verifiable credentials as a foundation can enable this kind of interoperability and portability that we want to see. So we have since June of 2022, hosted 3 plug fests that demonstrate a progression from left-hand side to right-hand side of this graphic. And I will quickly go through the 3 plug fests, including the one that we just hosted at IIW this past October. And I will say a couple of things about what we learned and what we think that means for the future. And I will also say that the links to all of the information, the technical specifications, the participants, the demo day videos are all available on the VC Edu page. So you can also follow along that way. So in this first PlugFest, we invited wallet implementers to demonstrate the credential wallet interoperability layer. So essentially this was our hello world that we are trying this out. We used the Open Badge version 3, which was still only in candidate final at the time we did the plug fest. And each of the wallet implementers was required to receive and display one verifiable credential, which was the JFF credential that we completely made up. It had a cute image. And essentially, we listed a few of the sort of data fields that we required to be displayed. And the observation that I would say, the takeaway from PlugFest 1 is that in the U.S. at least, education credential standards are still emerging and not broadly implemented. So as I mentioned before, we used the Open Badge version 3 while it was in candidate final. A number of changes occurred during the course of the PlugFest. And as a result of the PlugFest, so both as a result of I think 20 to 30 different wallet implementers giving feedback to the spec, but also because of errors that we found and suggestions for improvement. That is like, and I will sort of pin that and then get back to it later. And then I will say we sort of increased the technical difficulty for the second PlugFest. And we said that in order, again, to imagine a scenario where a person controls more than one credential, the wallet then needs to receive more than one verifiable credential from more than one issuer. But at the same time, we invited issuers to issue their credential into more than one wallet, sort of demonstrating that their wallet has viability outside of their own existing platform ecosystem. I have 3 general sort of observations that I think, again, I will pin and we can have a discussion around. But that there was I will call this the great protocol divide to be funny, but there were definitely protocol camps. We took the position that you could select your own protocol and that the PlugFest technical team would support any of the protocols that people selected. And generally, the 2 big teams were the VC API CHAPI team and then the teams using the OpenID stack. We did have in the second PlugFest a small number of people working with the DIDCOM V2 protocol. We also noted that there was a correlation between the protocol divide and some internationalization. So it raised a few questions about international compatibility. And then the third sort of observation that I definitely will pin is that some of the, I think there is a correlation also with protocol selection, internationalization, and the size and scale of implementers in different places. So finally, the PlugFest that we just did, we took a look at the next step after a person compiles a bunch of credentials, which is the verifiable presentation creation. And so the wallets were, so we went back to focusing on the wallets, and we told the wallet that they needed to request 3 credentials to receive a request for 3 credentials from the verifier. And then the wallet holder needs to be able to respond to the request by selecting which credentials to share and then creating a presentation to send back to the requester for verification. And essentially this was, I think this is like the ugliest slide, but I'm going to use it anyway because I don't have a better one. But like, we thought that this workflow simulated our real world use case, which is an institution, a training provider, an employer says to a person, I would like to give you a credential. A person agrees to accept it. And then on the other end of that, a potential employer or an institution where someone is applying, requesting to see the credential, and then a person, again, giving permission to see it. So we think that with the three PlugFests together, we were able to complete this transaction. We used, again, a fake JFF credential, which is the little green one. We also made a requirement that you had to use the U.S. permanent resident card, which I get. I think a number of people had the experience using because of the SVIP PlugFest. And then we had a miscellaneous number of credentials that we put into the VC playground that people could receive. And I think that I will, okay, so what happens in the end? Here's the website. You can take a quick look at the requirements. There's a link to the participant list with the videos that people submitted and an overview of what happened. Okay, so here is a list of who came to demo day. I just thought this was a fun graphic of where people were. But essentially, 22 wallets demonstrated this successfully. And I listed them below. In addition, there were six open source verifiers that were created by Danube Tech, Digital Bazaar, Zawala, Greek Universities Matter, and Vault ID, and then also one non-open source verifier that was created. I thought this was really interesting because we had initially not thought to focus on the verifier, but then there was so much interest in it that we just thought, oh, this is kind of a fun bonus. And then we had bonus points for one sort of pairing between Matter and the Greek Universities Network that demonstrated portability that was beyond just the requests that we put them. Okay, so I'm not going to play these videos, but I have linked two videos that I think are interesting. Randa, not just because Kimberly is on this call, but because it gives a great overview of how the technical requirements looked and what we were specifically requesting that wallet providers sort of demonstrate. I am also highlighting this wallet by a company called Go Beckley, the Universal Talent Passport, because they implemented a couple of features that were not required and that I think are interesting as far as like how does a person select credentials to be part of this presentation. And then I'm going to share this screenshot of our Slack channel. And this was actually one of the things that I appreciated the most about the PlugFest, which is that during the period of collaboration, it was truly collaborative. I'm not trying to put anyone on the spot. I just screenshotted this randomly in October for another demo, but people were really working together really well and appreciated how collaborative everyone approached this with. So before I get to what's next, I'm just wondering, should I stop for questions or should I just plow through?
Anyone have any questions? Rachel, please.
Hi. Yeah, I do have a question. I am, still relatively new to the credential exchange protocols, and I often will hear Chappie and BC API used as if they're, like, I guess the language around explaining, like, the different protocols. I often hear them kind of used almost synonymously, but then in other times I hear them described as separate protocols. So I was just hoping to have, I guess, some verbose clarification on that.
Does someone want to take that question? It's a little bit not related to the PlugFest, and so I'm afraid that I don't want to get that wrong.
Oh, Dimitri, you want it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Sure.
Dimitri, can I volunteer you?
yeah, no problem. And also I think, Ray, somebody else might be on the queue before me. But real quick, Chappie is a wallet selector. and it's able to pass on any sort of protocol through its pipes. And then VC API is one of the examples of the protocols with which the wallet selector works. But Chappie, the wallet selector, can also be used with OpenID and with DidCom. So that's a short version.
Thank you. And sorry that this wasn't totally related. Thanks again.
Thanks. Any other questions? All right, Sharon, please proceed.
So what's next? This is a really great question, something that we did take a little bit of a break after the third PlugFest from thinking about, but as we start planning for 2024, we want to be thinking about this. I actually just included really this picture that I took of IIW, and we had initial conversations about, like, what are some of the technical questions that we can be asking as we sort of think to how do we build on this. There are obviously some issues, like we could talk about like credential rendering and different, the ways that, like, you know, building out and different vocabularies and schemas or building out registries. There just are any number of miscellaneous sort of technical tasks that this would be a good opportunity to get done, you know, through the resources that we have to support PlugFest. Another approach is, again, I'm not going to play the video because I have no idea what's going to happen, but if you want to watch the video later, this is the demo that the Greek University Network and Matter did, where they showed the credential moving from a university in Greece to the system of record in a university in Canada. So, you know, one possible approach is, can we develop an actual end-to-end use case and use live credentials to then demonstrate that this sort of ecosystem has viability outside of the sandbox. So these are sort of two different approaches that we have in mind. I'm actually really curious about what you think as a group here and how that aligns with some current and or upcoming CCG work items. We want to align with the momentum that's already in the community instead of sort of creating our own thing. So as we think about it, though, there are three questions that are really just the top of my mind, and then I will, you know, also allow other people, including like Dimitri, who was, you know, really critical in the success of this, and some of the others that did participate to weigh in. But as we think about like future PlugFests, I think about the three things that I said that I observed, right? The first is like which protocols. And obviously, you know, JFF, we're not a technology vendor. We are not standards, you know, we're not like even really reps in the field. So we don't want to have a point of view on whether you should be using VC API Chappie or OpenID. But what we are noticing is that the sort of divide in who selects which protocols is actually, there are some interesting observations. So the first thing that we observed is that for a lot of vendors that are in the U.S., Chappie VC API tended to be the protocol that they selected, whereas some of our European wallet providers chose to use OpenID Connect. And I think that a lot of that has to do with, you know, the European Union and their position on this. There's no equivalent position that the U.S. government has. And in fact, there's not sort of an American digital credential standard, the same way there is a Europass learning model standard for how credentials are described. So that's one interesting sort of implementation question, because it is interesting to think about like how that will play out in the future. And I think it also has, like an observation that I had was also that may be related to how some of the larger, more influential tech companies, have fallen on the, like, which protocol to select scale. And I think that there typically is an argument that is made, which is, You know, if you do it the way that a very large tech company does it, then you will achieve a scale or scalability more quickly. I think, though, that in the U.S. market, that may not be the case, because especially in U.S. education, you know, academic freedom, faculty academic freedom is like kind of the most sort of important value. And there's not a principal of a elementary school or the chancellor of a college that could tell every professor or every teacher how to run their individual classroom, much less impose elements. Nor is it legally allowable for the U.S. Department of Education to implement models like in the same way that the European Union has. So I think that, you know, I have a little skepticism about whether aligning with large tech companies allows you to achieve scale and scalability. And so anyway, those are just the questions that I have about, like, how does this play out in protocols, while at the same time wanting to understand, since we have, you know, some potential interest in, like, international credential portability, whether that makes U.S. institutions and U.S. wallets sort of compatible with that kind of demonstration. The next question that I think about is, like, what is the interoperability that we still need to demonstrate? Like, are we satisfied as a group that we did actually demonstrate the kind of interoperability that using verifiable credentials and DIDs allow? And if not, like, what is still missing from that picture? Because I think fundamentally, like, use case is one thing, but the other, like, the counterpart to that is, like, did the technology, did the infrastructure we're proposing do the thing that we said it should do? And so then it gets us to just size matter for scale, which is related to what I just said about, like, whether big companies adopt certain standards, but also, like, how then do we, like, promote widespread use of verifiable credentials, whether it's in the education transfer use case, whether it's in the employment use case? Is it by promoting, like, large scale sort of issuance of the verifiable credentials? Is it working with verifiers to actually demonstrate that they can receive and verify the credentials? Is it working with holders so that there are more wallets and more people demanding the credentials? So I think that there's no wrong answer really, but it's more an issue of, like, where can we get impact? What kind of impact, and what would everyone be interested in working on? So I'm going to stop there and open it up for other people to talk, and feel free to ping me after I left my email address here, and I'll stop sharing.
Thank you, Sharon. Mm-hmm. All right, David, you're on the queue.
Thank you. Yeah, Sharon, there's some new interop that's starting in the OpenID Foundation's GAIN proof of concept group. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the thing that they're demonstrating, which you haven't done, which might answer your question what to demonstrate next, is selective disclosure. So their implementation is based on SDJWTs using the OpenID Connect protocol. And having the selective disclosure feature is obviously important in certain use cases. So I don't know if that's something you want to consider to demonstrate next. They're actually quite a significant way behind what you've done, because they're only currently defining the profile for what was your GFF Plugfest 2. In other words, getting a credential from an issuer into a wallet. That's where they're at the moment. But I think it's something that you might be interested in. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, David. I think I definitely am. And I know also that Anil is interested. So for there's some version of this going on with his Plugfest. So let's definitely connect. I would love to know more about what that group is working on. And let's see if there's some, like, areas of, I think, synergy.
Any other questions? Benjamin.
Yes, someone who participated at the Plugfest, I just wanted to publicly thank Sharon and the rest of the team for all they've done. It was a really great experience, and if you weren't aware of it and hope to participate in the future, I'd definitely stay in touch with them.
Thank you, Benjamin. Any other questions or comments? Kimberly. Yeah.
So I don't know if this is a question or a comment or just maybe a provocative statement, hoping that someone will kind of jump in. But I think, you know, a lot of us have been involved in the Plugfest, and Benjamin, I want to echo what you said, Sharon, for us, these have been the technical deadlines that propelled us forward, and really like made us, you know, make sure that we were doing the thing that we thought we were doing. And I'm so grateful and appreciative for that. One of the things that we've been, I think those of us that are in this community have been very much a part of conversations around skills and skills-based hiring and the importance of helping those 75 million people represent their skills. And I think that I have been thinking about verifiable credentials and open badges and comprehensive learner records as being the thing that tells the skill. But I think maybe those aren't as closely tied as I think that they are. And I'm wondering what people are thinking about in terms of how wallets display skills as opposed to achievements and assertions. And I think all of a sudden I'm sort of like, I've had this sort of light bulb moment that skills are even more of a granular step down from an open badge or from any kind of a credential. And how are we thinking about those? I don't know that was sort of just a rant, but if anyone else wants to jump in and kind of add what they're thinking, I'd love to hear it.
Rachel.
Hi. Yeah, I was looking into some of the other wallets that are out there, and I saw this one company is using rich skill descriptors. It's something, again, that I'm kind of new to, so I'm not exactly sure how they are attached to a credential or if it's like a separate type of recognition object. But I think that, I don't know if anyone else here knows a lot about that, but I'd love to learn more about that as well. And I think that that might be a good avenue of connection between sharing those more granular skills outside of a specific credential or achievement.
Colin?
I really appreciate this conversation and Sharon for walking through all the Plugfest details, but I want to kind of go further. I'll let somebody else talk about rich skill descriptors and RSDs, because those I think are definitely have a place in this, especially as we think about like an open source, freely available stack to build on. But Kim's point around skills and the way that those are coded and the way that those are presented. We've been doing a lot of work with employers and HR tech providers, to understand kind of their view on digital credentials, learning and employment records, CLRs, like all these pieces. And one thing that continues to come up is the view or the perspective of an individual's learning record, whatever that looks like, from a different stakeholder perspective. So if I have a wallet and I'm viewing my achievements, my skills, what have you, inside that wallet and prepare that or connect that to an HR platform or export something as a resume to share with a, you know, application tracking system or a potential employer, what is that view like on their side? How do they ingest that content? And then how is it appearing in their dashboards? So that's something that we, you know, as we think about sort of the different stakeholders and the views of these skills, we're wondering how can we package it or help unpack the package in a way that makes most sense for the stakeholders that are viewing it, if that makes sense.
Any questions in regards to Colin's comment? All right, Sharon, you're next.
Great. That's a great comment and a great question. And I think that this is also the question that we have about what interoperability demonstrate. The way that I have always viewed it is that, you know, there are standards for the credential, and then within the credential, which is the credential design aspects of this, there are, there's sort of another level of interoperability that needs to happen with the skills data. So at JFF, we do encourage people that we work with. So we support a number of projects that involve, you know, developing training programs or developing, you know, workforce pathways. And we always ask people, like, we try to ask people this. You can't obviously make anyone do anything they don't want to, but, to do the hard work of, using linked open data to describe the skills that are within the credentials and provide sufficient detailed information about, like, what did a person have to do to earn the credential in addition to some of the, you know, credential provenance data. And I think where that gets us is, like, what intelligence can you then generate based on the data that's within the credential, right? So you have almost two problems that you've identified, Kimberly. One is the credential portability. So can the credential move from place to place? And then the second question, which is, once it's moved to its secondary location for verification, what is the person looking at and what do they hope to know from that credential? And then sort of a sub bullet of that would be the issue of, you know, which is all of the rage these days. What can a wallet, tell you about the things that are in the wallet? And this is where I think, we're in a little bit of a dangerous place. So like I said, it's all the rage, AI career path finding. That's like the number one kind of investment in workforce tech that's happening these days. You know, I think the phrase Google Maps for your career comes up in almost every company pitch I hear. And the idea is you have a bunch of skills. You've shared them to some system that will tell you, based on the skills that you have, here are some possible job opportunities or training opportunities. Or, you know, based on what you're interested in pursuing, here are some things that you can do to fill your skills gap. The reason I think this is dangerous is twofold. Number one, I think that we don't know like how those AI bots were trained and whether those recommendations are good or bad, because it's not the same as Netflix telling me to watch a show and I thumbs down it. There's very rarely a feedback loop back to the algorithm to say whether this was a good, bad, or okay recommendation. The second thing is, what does a wallet see about you? And does the wallet give you the ability to withhold the information? So can Patagonia look inside my backpack? Do I give it permission? What can it see? I think the same applies, which is why I do like a lot the idea of the selective disclosure that David mentioned earlier. So I think that this is an interesting idea of the skills. I think, is it the most important thing? I don't know. I can be convinced. But do I think it opens up a conversation about what else makes a more robust, verifiable credentials ecosystem? I think absolutely. So I don't know. That doesn't answer the question, but I feel like those are my rants about it.
Great. Thanks. Frank?
Yeah. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Sharon, great presentation. Great effort on JFF. I really think it's very important to verify, information. It's a growing need. It's out there. Employers are looking for that. Educators as well as the individuals. In terms of the question that was asked on skills, so, IQ4, we have spent a lot of time on the digging deep into solving that skills problem. And that skills problem, it does get down to that level of granularity. I forget who it was who brought up the comment before. In the OSN, the Open Skills Network, that's referred to as rich skill descriptors. In the NICE framework, for example, in cybersecurity, it's referred to as knowledge, skills, and abilities. This is what we call a tier 4 skill. meaning it's a descriptor of somebody's knowledge or ability or skill to do something. It's also similar to a job requisition task. So as you all know, organizations spend a lot of time describing what they're looking for, and those are descriptors. They're not just a single word. And also similar to what we see as learning outcomes for curriculum. So what's the common thread through all of this? It is a level of granularity that's common among curriculum, job requirements, and individual's ability. And bringing that together is absolutely critical, and not using AI necessarily, but using a robust data schema, data model that provides multiple taxonomies to interoperate together. So that at the end of the day, if I upload a credential from Western Governors University or from any organization, I'm able to parse that data into a level of granularity that really can describe what I'm capable of doing. There's two parts to that. Okay, if we look at the RSDs, one is a direct correlation between the metadata in that credential, because a lot of credentials do have that level of granularity, into the skills of that individual. The other component is it may not have that level of granularity. It may need to cross-reference credential engine and the registry and the metadata located there, so we can then extrapolate that information and compare it to some taxonomy standard. Or at least some taxonomy that's similar to the skills and the content that's related to that credential. So to wrap it up, I do agree with you. The next step really is the ability to translate these credentials into a level of granularity that could be understood between educators, individuals, and employers. I hope that helps a little bit.
You know, I actually wasn't suggesting, I just wanted to clarify, I wasn't necessarily suggesting that like skills is where the next PlugFest is going, because actually once was thinking that we would keep it on the technical interop of the credential itself.
Cool.
Hi, and Sharon, I didn't mean, that wasn't pointed at the next step. That was pointed, there was another lady that had brought up, she looked at RSDs and was just wondering where that was. That's where I was focused on that. Sorry about that. I should have made that clear.
Great. Yeah, so I just want to make a note on kind of skills data. So at my company, Spokio, for talent analytics, we just use LinkedIn Talent Insights data. So I actually know people from LinkedIn working on that project. So they do a lot of ETLs and data standardization. So if you go to LinkedIn and then in the skills section, all the skills, and it can be very, very granular. Like by granular, I meant you're going to agile developments, you know, and then even more granular than that, all the skills actually are standardized to Wikipedia definitions. So that's how much time, resources, and effort they put into cleaning and standardizing the skills data. So that's what we use, because when we first trying to do data analysis on skills data, and by the way, skills are defined as what people know, right? So it's different from experience. We call it experience, which actually maps to work, education, achievements, and then also different from competencies, which is like basically behaviors and how you do things, like such as leadership and so on, so on. So skills we define as what people know. When we were doing data analysis, standardizations, we realized that LinkedIn data is actually the best. So just want to share that little knowledge. All right, any other comments?
So I just want to add in, Sharon, I'm sorry to kind of derail this on the skills, but I do think like one of the things that it has brought to my mind is that, you know, we already have a place in the credential to make these links to Credential Engine, rich skill descriptors, and that's on me to maybe make better use of that. But I do want to ask you just sort of, I know we're approaching the end of time. So, you know, what can we as a community provide for you to sort of help you make a decision around, you know, the focus of PlugFest 4? And then I guess my like selfish question is, and do you have any like ideas around like when you think PlugFest 4 will it be this spring? Will it be fall? Will it be 25? Just as, you know, it's the time of year we're all thinking about our 24 roadmaps.
Yes, that's a great question. I wish I had a more clear answer for you, but on our team's roadmap is in the spring, we're actually going to do a refresh of our digital wallets market scan. And we're going to take a slightly different approach. This is not going to be, are there more verifiable credential wallets in the ecosystem? The question that we're going to ask is, in developing this market scan, we identified four areas of impact that we thought could really make a difference for our particular use case. And they involve, you know, and I will drop the link in. I cannot do this very quickly, but what we're looking at is a little bit more of an exploration of how to identify that those are the characteristics, whether they are the correct ones and how you might implement if you are an implementer that hasn't done that yet, or how you might procure something that has those characteristics. So it'll be more a deep dive into like wallet anatomy and physiology than it will be a refresh Lumascape. So that's what we have coming in the spring. Also coming in the spring, what we're doing is we have contracted with a survey firm to do a survey of job seekers to get a sense for, with the population who has done a job search within the last 6 months, how many of them were able to use a digital credential in that process, when and how, and whether they use digital wallets. We think that will be really interesting information since there have previously been surveys around which employers consider non-resume, non-transcript information in their hiring, as well as surveys of institutions of higher education for what they issue. So we think that will really round out our picture of you know, the scalability of this. And so then as a result of that, our team is a little bit busy through the spring and we might do this. We might kick it off in the summer for fall again. And how to contribute. This seems like far away, but actually preparing the resources for something like this does take a minute. So I would love for, you know, people to have a conversation about this. I can kick it off. I think what I can do is I will reply all to the thread with the recording and the slides, and we can have a conversation on the listserv about that, or everyone is welcome to send me an email with your thoughts, and perhaps we'll have, you know, an open sort of webinar type discussion in early 2024 to continue this conversation.
Great, thank you. Any other last questions or comments? All right, so we're at time. So thank you, Sharon, for jumping on and actually great presentations and as well as leading this discussion in regards to the PlugFest, summarizing the last three PlugFest as well as like previewing what might come in the future. So thanks a lot. All right, so just before we conclude, just want to give a quick shout out to Will again. Thank you for being the co-chair and joining me and Kimberly to help grow this community together. And then, as I mentioned earlier, just want to solicit developer volunteers to help us build a script to automate the process of publishing the video recordings. And that's it. So this concludes this week's CCG meeting. So thanks for hopping on. Have a good one.